Welcome, everybody, to the Strongpreneur Podcast. My name is Tom Reber. Today, I am excited to have Peter Vitale on the show with me. Now, if you don't know Peter, you're going to know a lot about him in the next half an hour or so. He was recommended to me by one of our earlier guests on the show, Adam Mock. Adam got his hair cut and happened to get it cut by Peter, and sitting in the chair, they became fast buddies. And Adam texted me immediately when he got out of there, says, "You have to have this man on the Strongpreneur Podcast." So without further ado, Peter, I want to welcome you to the show, man. I'm fired up that we were able to make this happen, and I'd love to, if you could just share a little bit about who you are, what you do, and intro yourself to our guests.
Sure. Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. My name is Peter Vitale. I've been a barber for about 36 years. I've been dealing with men for just that long. It's been an interesting road, getting together with men and having a one-to-one, heart-on-heart relationship with men. And through the years, the thing about it is that I have been seeing a lack over the generations in men. What I try to do is not just cut hair, but also I'm very interested in pulling out greatness in men, because I believe that we're really living in a mediocre type of a society. And for me, nothing gets me charged up more than to be able to talk to men and to be able to have that rapport, that rapport where men will actually trust you and let them in into their world. Mm-hmm. And what's really exciting for me is to be able to really ask some discovery-based questions to these men and really be able to start to pull some things out, because they're not hearing these things. And for me, it's much more than just cutting hair. Obviously, I'm also starting to reinvent myself a little bit and getting into some more coaching and things of that nature, and getting involved in the lives of these men is key to me.
That's awesome, man. So you've been behind the, cutting hair for over 30 years.
Yes.
And you really see it as an opportunity to really connect with people, which has led you to starting, not too long ago, your coaching business called Corner Man Coaching, right? Is that how that came about?
Right. Corner Man Life Coach.
Mm-hmm. Corner Man Life Coach. And so what is, where did that name come from?
Well, actually, Tom, I came from a boxing family. My father was a pro fighter. I got pictures of him, of the old Rocky Marciano. He had pictures with all these old time fighters. And when I was a little kid, the first thing my father wanted to do was teach me how to fight. And I says, "How come I got to learn how to fight, Dad?" He says, "Because one day," he said, "you're going to be with your wife and you're going to be sitting in a chair. You're going to go to the bathroom and some guy's going to say, 'This is my chair now.'" And he says, "And that day, son, you're going to be glad you know how to handle yourself." I said, "Okay, Pop." I never was always a gentleman. You never started. He says, "If you ever start a fight, I'll make sure that I end it with you." And I had a real old school father, but he just wanted his family, his kids, his boys to know how to handle themselves. So we were just a big boxing family. We loved boxing. We followed it. My dad knew some pro fighters. He was pro himself. So, really when I started thinking about coaching, I recognized the fact that, coaching, really, you're outside the combat zone. You are someone who is outside the combat zone, but you're offering strategy. You're offering different ways of doing things. You're seeing things that fighter is not seeing.
Right.
And that's why he needs a corner man. And I says, something for what I want to do. I said that the perfect name would be a corner man, because I believe that every man, or at least most men, they need a corner man, because they're not seeing things the way they are. They don't have someone in a corner watching them do this fight called life. And so it was something that just kind of came to me, and I figured, and it's one of my little taglines, is that every man needs a Mick. We look at Rocky, and I often tell him, I says, "Do you think Rocky would have hit the heights that he hit had he not had Mick. And I says that I believe that that's the way with men. I don't believe they're going to hit the heights they can hit if they don't have a Mick. So I'm a Mick.
That's I'm awesome. A quarter man. You know, Mick was a phenomenal character in those movies. And I would agree with you. I think every man and woman, for that matter, needs that corner man or corner woman in their life.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we need that other set of eyes that can look at things and, you know, tell us to that things are going to be okay, tell us to step it up when we need to step it up, or everything in between. So I think that's great. So you've had thousands and thousands of conversations with guys through the years, whether formally in a coaching environment or them sitting in the chair. What is it that you think most men wished other people knew about them?
What men, I'm sorry, Tom, rephrase that again.
Yeah, you know, what is it that you think most men wished other people knew about them?
Well, you know, it's funny because most men really don't believe that people really know them in at the level that they want them to know them. There's a big need in a man's life is the fact that he's always trying to put up some kind of a front. He's trying to put he puts on a mask. He wants to appear to be something that he might not really be. And because men are very, very cautious as to who they really spill their guts to, I think that really one of the deepest needs of a man in trying to really getting to know him, really understanding him, really being intimate, I think that this is something that is definitely outside the box of a man, because he's very leery. He's almost built in to be a loner. You know, when guys are out together, very, very rarely are they really out together. They're all being someone else. They all have fears. They all have disappointments. They all have things that they're ashamed of, ghosts in the closets, things that are haunting them. And it's a rare time when they can really sit down and talk about those things. And this is where I believe a coach comes in really handy, is that the trust level is so great that he can really be who he is. And I think this is one of the big things about men, is that they're unwilling to be able to spill his guts and really be able to tell him what's on his mind. And that's a thing that most men have in common.
Yeah, I would echo that, at least for me. I know there's levels of me that that I feel like nobody's ever seen.
Right.
And just to be quite honest, I don't even know how to get there.
Right.
You know, I don't know how to share it. I don't know how to move beyond certain things. Heck, I don't even know what those certain things are. You know what I mean? But I just right. know that I'm a lot deeper than I probably appear to be.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And you know, Tom, it's the kind of thing that, I mean, I've had men who have told me things they've never told their wives. Mm-hmm. You know, that level of trust, you know, that's one of the coaching competencies, is that we develop that kind of an arena where it's that intimate, that close, and actually the man has a safe place where he can come and talk about things that he's never talked about, cry. Maybe for the first time in the presence of another man. And so these things for men to really get in touch with who they are, they've got to have these places, these safe havens, these places where they're able to be who they are. And really, as you say, get down to a level that they haven't touched in a while. It's really key.
So, excuse me, Mike. Choking over here. What percentage of guys do you that you think land in your chair are discontent?
Yeah, wow. Man, I'll tell you something, man. I used to live in Naperville. And in Naperville, I had two very upscale men's salons. They were probably a couple of miles from one another. And it's really when I made my big jump from barber to, gentleman's salon, mm-hmm. where I had, haircuts and shaves. And there was we had a cigar lounge and we had, manicure and pedicure and, massage. And it was a place where, you can really go and be a man and really enjoy yourself. It's great. Enjoy great service. And I had all these guys that, if you looked at them from the surface, you would say, wow, man, he's got it all. He's got the Lexus. He's got the $500,000 home. He's got the trophy wife. He's got the perfect kids and, either a business or a great paying job, big bonuses. He's got it all, man. And I would have guys come and sit in my chair, and I have never heard such voices of desperation in my life. But again, Tom, it was always masked. And it wasn't only till I was able to spend a little time with these guys that they were able to take the mask off and talk a little bit about what was going on in their lives. And it's an amazing thing what we place as valuable and what we place as great. Mm-hmm. And I had guys that literally would just confide in me and shed tears about how discontent they really are. And although it all looks right, it's very wrong. And it was really a very, very eye-opening and very sad situation.
Where do you think that discontentment came from? Like you said, that everything's there on the surface. They're making the money, they got the house, all that other stuff. What do you think caused that discontentment? And I know everybody's different, but just did you see any generalities?
Well, really, I believe it's the lies that we're told, Tom. We're told that, if you have A, B, C, and D, you can be very, very happy. I mean, we see this with sports, right? We see a guy who he rises to the top. He's got all this talent. He's raw ability. He signs the big contract. I remember Deion Sanders. I mean, who's more athletic than this guy? Mm-hmm. He's got, he's a professional baseball player and a professional football player. This guy, I remember his testimony. He was saying that he was literally standing at the it was football season at the time, and he was sitting. He was actually kneeling on one knee with his helmet, and the whole other football team was on the other side of the gridiron practicing. And he said he had it all: big house, big car, wife, this, that, women, money. Whatever he wanted, he had. And he said he remembers tears coming down his eyes and feeling so empty and so desperate. And then he later on, he gave this testimony. He says, how can you be in a stadium with everybody yelling your name and feel so lonely? How can you drive a $300,000 car and not know where you're going? How can you wear a $3,000 Armani suit and feel so naked? And here was a guy who had it all and yet wasn't in the place of satisfaction, place really where he can enjoy all that God had blessed him with. It's an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. And, men have a thing, they don't reach out. There's an old saying, somebody said this, he says that most men live in quiet desperation And in the end, they go to their graves with a song in their heart. And to me, this has got to be one of the most chilling statements I've ever heard, and one of the most sad, you know, to live in quiet desperation and to realize that there's a song in your heart that has not yet been sung. And that was the case with, although he accomplished the things he accomplished, he was a very, very sad man. And I think that's just an example of so many men out there.
Yeah, I know that, again, I certainly can't speak for all the other guys in the world here, but, you know, I know for me, one of the things that was really hard for me early on in business was I would compare myself to guys that had been in business like 20 years longer than me. And yeah. I had this expectation that I needed to be there and it messed with my head. It was a lot of head trash. I never felt like I was successful enough. And over the years, I'm certainly not out of the woods with this thinking yet. I mean, there's, you know, I still personally struggle with comparisons a lot. What I'm learning to do is get clear on what success means to me. And what I found over the years is, you know, take money, for instance. You know, money's important to me, but it's not one of my driving factors.
Right.
One of my driving values. It's not, you know, I'm more interested in having an impact than I am with how much money I make. And, you know, I think we all have different values, whether it's, you know, family or our faith or, you know, charity. And so I think, you know, for me, the thing that's really helped me to find more contentment is just defining what success looks like to me and not really worry about what it's supposed to look like, if that makes sense.
Sure. Absolutely. That's 100% right. And, you know, what I also often tell a lot of guys too, Tom, is, you know, sometimes we're so very goal oriented and goals are wonderful. You know, many times in my coaching, you know, we have to give, you know, field work. We have to be able to give them some work to do, because it's not enough just to know something, but you have to know it and then you have to do something about it. So, you know, goals are definitely very, very important. But what I try to also stress is that what we miss out on is the journey. Because the journey is where all the fun is. You know, I remember one time, you know, me and my wife, we were going to go on a trip and we had a beautiful picture. Excuse me. We had a beautiful picture of where we were going to go. And it was somewhere in the Caribbean. And they had a picture of the resort and, you know, the trees and everything. And it, you know, the water looked beautiful. Anyway, when we got there, the destination didn't really match up with the picture. I said, you know what? This doesn't look like the picture. And, you know, right away a life lesson hit me. And I said, you know what? We woke up early this morning. You know, the limo was ready. We poured a little mimosa. You know, we relaxed. We talked. We got to the airport. We had an egg McMuffin. You know, we all this fun we were having getting to the trip. And then when we got there, we found that the destination really wasn't what we thought it would be. As many times, that's the way it is in life. You know, we look to get to a destination. We kill ourselves. We work overtime. We sacrifice. And then when we get to that place, we find out that the other side is not what we thought it would be. And we really didn't enjoy that journey. So the message that I have, let's do the goal thing. Let's get there. But in the meantime, let's enjoy the journey, because it's when you're going to find out that that was really where all the fun was.
You know, that reminds me of years ago when I was building my painting company, and my business partner and I, in the first couple years, you know, he'd be out scrambling for work, I'd be out scrambling for work, and every time one of us would sell a job, you know, we would call the other guy. No matter what we were doing, hey, I just sold $3,000 job. He'd be like, hey, great job. And then an hour later, he'd call me, hey, I just sold a, you know, whatever, $1,500 job. And this used to go on. And we used to, I look back now and it's crystal clear. We celebrated often. Like everything that happened that was good, we celebrated it in some way, even if it was just a quick phone call. And as the years went by and the business grew and it got a lot bigger, I'm doing, you know, several hundred paint jobs a year and things like that, we stopped celebrating. And I remember if I look back now, that's right around the time that I think it started burning me out.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't enjoying the ride anymore as much. And so, you know, for me, that lesson is, you know, in whatever we're doing, try to take time to, you know, high five yourself. In fact, I was at a, where the heck was I? I was at somebody's office and they had a high five hand on the wall.
Yeah.
It's like you walk by and you can high five it. So
yeah,
you
gotta nice.
Put in your own high five hand or something and pat yourself in the back.
Yeah. That's...
So you've, with your coaching, you talk about, and you've talked about it in your own life, reinventing yourself. What, how have you reinvented yourself over the years?
Well, I'll tell you something, Tom. You know, what I do in cutting hair, as I said, it's been 36 years now. And I have to tell you that in the past, I mean, I really loved what I did. It just oozed out of me. I loved being with them. It was like going to a men's club, you know, like a club where there's a bunch of guys and, you know, you cut hair, you're talking, you got the ball game on. I mean, who wouldn't love a scenario like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I went to that every day. I was an entrepreneur. I had six locations, and I would visit them all, and I'd have relationships in every one of them. And we, you know, I really enjoyed what I did, and I didn't even think about it. But it's funny because when you do something for a really, really long time, I believe there's a small, still voice that begins to work on you. And you, oftentimes it comes in the place of a crisis. And I think that a man comes to a crossroads, and all of a sudden he starts to feel a little bit different about the thing that he loved. And he feels a call. There's a call to something greater. There's a call to something bigger. Does it mean that there's going to be more money? Maybe sometime, but that's not necessarily the case. But there's a call. And what happened with me, Tom, is that I had a change of heart, and it happened in a millisecond, man. I just went to work one day, like every other day in Naperville. I had a beautiful shop. Actually, the shop of my dreams. It took me over 30 years to get the shop. It was gorgeous. I had everything I ever wanted. A shoeshine stand. I had all kinds of people working for me. And I just getting ready for my day, cutting hair, talking with guy, and all of a sudden, man, it was like somebody just blew the fire out of me in a millisecond. And I just took a step back, and I, for the first time in three decades, I felt empty inside. Like, this is not my call anymore. And all of a sudden I started to struggle with this. Well, you know, as we would have it, really everything that I had, Tom, I lost everything. We had an economic downturn. I literally had a fire go out in me, and I lost everything that I worked for 30 years. And what this really helps me in coaching, Tom, is that I'm able to help men who have lost everything. You know, you can't coach something that you have never experienced. I'm sorry. You just can't. You got to come from a place where you know, what this man is feeling, what this woman is feeling. And what happened with me is I got a small, still voice. I got a calling to something. And as me and you were talking just a little bit before, I started to really reach out and wanting to know, what is this thing that I want to do? What is God calling me to now? And I realized that all these years that I have been coaching, I says, you know what, this is the thing that I believe that God's calling me to not to cut hair and shave anymore, but to really to be able to coach men, to be able to help them in taking their next step in a forward movement. And there's so many men that are stuck, and I see myself now as an agent, as a corner man, as someone who can come alongside a guy or come alongside a woman, really be able to pull greatness out of them. And so this was a life altering thing for me. So when you talk about reinventing myself, I'd like to say that it was my own idea, but it wasn't. It happened to me. And I believe that that happens to a lot of men. But what happens is they follow the same path rather than understanding that something has happened to me and I've got to find out what that is. I got to find out what that call is, because oftentimes, Tom, the other side of that is greatness. Because I believe that what we are being prepared for greatness for probably 30, 40 years. I believe greatness shows up in about your 40s or your 50s, because it comes to you when you're a baby. It comes to you in seed form. And what happens is it's got to be watered. It's got to be watered on. It's got to be rained on. And it gets to a place where it literally dies. The seed dies. And what happens is that greatness wants to sprout out. And we've got to be, men have got to understand that. This is the reason for the crisis. This is the reason for the divorce. This is the reason for whatever happened to you in your life. And we got to allow, say, you know what? I want to say yes, not to money. I want to say yes to greatness. And this is what I believe men are looking for, what happens to us in our lives, and certainly what happened to me.
Man, that's makes me want to ask you this question. You've lost it all at that point. What kind of conversation is going on inside your head about you?
Well, I would be lying to you, Tom, to tell you that I could just shake it off and no problem. It was a devastating loss. I mean, how do you look at something that you have built for 30 years, a lifestyle, and all of a sudden say goodbye to it? But, you know, I come from a camp of faith, and I have to believe, and I do believe, that if I'm saying goodbye to that, there is a reason that I have said goodbye to that. And I believe that now I am transitioning into something that I can say hello to. It's one of the questions that I ask men all the time. What do you need to say goodbye to so that you could say hello to? Because, you know, you can't say hello to something that you're still hanging on to. Mm-hmm. So what I have to, it's really funny too, because I've been coaching myself through all of this. And it's like, you know what? I have to be able to close that door. And what I'm praying for is I'm praying for this door to open, some new, you know, that Red Sea type thing, man, because I know that there is something out there, and this is where my company, this is why I developed my company. This is why I have my website and my coaching practice. I want to continue to move that forward. This is really the call to greatness, and every man has it. And the big mistake is to ignore the great call and to continue doing what you're doing. You know, we have to realize that one day we'll be gone and that people are going to remember us for something. And I know what I want to be remembered for. And I think that if men were to really ask that question, what am I going to be remembered for? I think they're going to find that it's going to be for a much greater good than what they're doing right now. And that's what I want to do. I want to call guys up. There's so many guys that just pull guys down. Mm-hmm. They pull them down. And I want to pull you up. I want to say, no, that's not good. This, you need to move that up. We need to call you up. You know, we got kids, Tom, you know, that are growing up right now that they believe that eighth place is okay because they got a trophy.
Right.
You know, eighth place is not good. Did you try your best? Okay. But you know what? We're going to have to work on that. Okay. Don't reward mediocrity.
Yeah.
You know, we need to reward greatness, not good, not better, great. And this, I want to be the, you know, I want to be that voice in the desert because that's what we need. And it ain't one man. It's too big for one man. We need a whole bunch of men doing this.
So how do you define greatness?
Well, you know, Tom, that's a great question. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, Tom. I've asked that question to myself in many times. But for me, I mean, I have to tell you, greatness is definitely not the definition that we give. I can tell you that. We look at a man and he's got a basketball and he throws it into a net. And he throws it into the net more than he misses. And so what we do is we say, well, he's great. You know, we got a guy who hits a lot of home runs and he's great. We got a celebrity, you know, that acts in a few movies and we say he's great. But, you know, Tom, I really believe that, as I was mentioning before, I believe in the first part of our lives, we do great. We are able to do great things. But I believe in the second part of our lives, we have to be able to be great. Those are two different things, to do great and to be great. We have seen many great men fall, either morally, spiritually, emotionally. They've fallen either through their relationships. They have done a great thing, but really have not been great. What I think the call is to do great and to be great. And you know what? Greatness many times is not even seen. You know, you look at a single mother with three children, and she's trying to raise them, and she's taking them to school, and she's doing the thing all by herself. She's going to work. She's working hard. You know, she never wrote a book. You're never going to know about her. But you know what, Tom? She's great. So I think what we have to do, we have to redefine what that greatness is. It's different for every one of us, but we have to understand that we got to redefine that. And to be great is really the thing that we want to go towards. We want to be great.
So you've mentioned a couple times in this conversation about greatness showing up later in life. What do you tell that person who's had the crap kicked out of them recently? And I don't, you know, I know this is not what I'm going to get from you. Not that I'm looking for some rah-rah speech here, but what do you tell the person who's lost it all at this point? What do you tell the person who's, they got that little voice inside of them going, man, you gotta make some changes, maybe look at reinventing yourself. You know, they're at a position in their life right now. What do you say to them?
Well, for somebody that's got the crap kicked out of them, first of all, like I said, I can relate. I can understand that. And I think that's the first step, Tom, is, you know what? I'm not going to tell you anything right now. I want to just let you know that I understand where you're at, man. I know the pain. I know the tears. I know the question marks. I know the fear. You know, it's so important. And, you know, Tom, it's a really difficult thing. But when you go through devastating loss, there are not very many people that you know in your world that can really be able to understand and come from a place of compassion, because it's not happened to them. You know, sometimes we look for friendship. We look for people to come around us, come alongside us. But oftentimes, you know, those people are not there. Your friends who you think your friends, they disappear. People disappear, and you feel very, very isolated. The first thing that somebody needs to feel and needs to understand is that they have a friend in you. Because really, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for someone that they can talk to, someone that they can unload on, someone that they can let know that, you know what, you know, I'm not doing well right now, man. I'm not doing well at all. And it's so important to be able to have the compassion and to have the understanding of where somebody is coming from. You know, without you going through certain things, Tom, there's no way that you can be an effective coach. You've got to be able to feel what they're feeling. You got to be before you can understand dirt, you got to eat dirt. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I could tell you the one thing in my life, what I would have wanted is somebody, and there have been people in my life, you know, I can't say that, but you know, you're really looking for a close friend. You know, You're looking for someone that you can relate with. And from that place, Tom, that's the first step. From that place, you can begin to rebuild. But you got to be willing to fight. You've got to be willing to get up. I tell guys all the time, there is no problem with getting knocked down. If you're in this life, understand one thing, you are going to get knocked down in this game called life. You know, Rocky Balboa in that last movie, he's got a great speech. I love that. And sometimes I put that up on my Facebook, but just talking about, you know, he says it to his son, I don't care how tough you think you are, you know, nothing hits like life. And he goes on through this whole great speech, and it's really true. You got to get up, though. You got to get up. There's only shame in not getting up. You have to get up, and you have got to begin to move forward. And that's one of the key things.
Yeah, I mean, I did a video, I don't know, a year or so ago where I talked about, you know, if you're looking to make a turnaround in your life or your business, you know, you're the turnaround expert. You're the one that has to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make that commitment. And I I've been there too. You know, I've been bankrupt and lost my house and had other crap go on in life. And there's definitely a time when you just go, all right, you know what? Enough, you know, it happened. And so what? Move on. I'm not going to let this thing define who I am.
Right.
As an individual, this was an event in my life. Could I have done some things differently? Absolutely. And so I'm going to take those things. And when I rebuild, I'm going to rebuild stronger. But ultimately, you know, we are responsible for, you know, that turnaround in our life. So that was the Rocky speech. I love that Rocky speech, man. That's that's a great one.
And it is, Tom. You know, that's one thing that I would tell men. I would tell women, you have got to get up. You got to get up, man. And my father used to tell me, and you know, when we used to be talking about, you know, boxing, he said, the heart of a champion, he said, it's not when you're winning. He says, anybody can throw punches at somebody and you know, be victorious and everything. That's great, you know, but that never tests the heart. When your heart is tested, whether you're a champion or not, is when you go down, how do you respond? Do you respond by staying down, or do you respond by getting up? And he told me all the time, the test of a champion, the test of his heart, is how does he react when he goes down? And I never forgot that. And I believe that is so true in life, man. Your heart is being tested. What are you going to do?
So let me, I got a couple more questions before I let you go here today. What do you see that fires you up about men right now? You know, it's easy to say that, you know, there's mediocrity and all this stuff happening, but what is it that you're seeing that inspires you?
What inspires me about men? I have to tell you, I would tell you, and I don't mean to sound, I would probably have to tell you that there's more that concerns me about men than inspires me right now. I'm very concerned about the plight of men right now. I believe we've got a real problem. I believe that society, this is not just a man, but this is not just a problem that is isolated in a place or two. This is a problem that our country is facing right now. You know, you might you see these issues with policemen and the youth, and we see policemen that are practicing brutality, and we want to say that this is a politics problem, this is a policy problem, this is a city urban problem, this is a racial problem. The fact of the matter is that those are just the fruit of what the root is. What we have, Tom, is we have a man problem, we have a father problem. We have a lack of father problem. And these young boys are not being trained and taught as young men. And these are the young boys that are going out into our society every day who don't understand what no means. They don't understand authority. They don't understand respect. And this is a problem. And it's everybody's problem because we see it on the news all the time. We have a real man crisis here. I believe that this is something that we have got to take very, very seriously, or we're going to have some real problems in this society. And so what would inspire me is the fact that I see that such a time as this, that if I can be raised up and other men like me can be raised up, well, maybe we can do something about this. Maybe we can do something about little boys dressed in men's uniforms who have never really transitioned into men, who don't understand certain things that you need to know to be a man. This is what inspires me, Tom. This is the thing that inspires me, because I believe that we are at a critical point in our country right now. We're in a crossroads. And if we don't make some changes and we don't start getting serious about this, we're going to have some real issues to deal with.
Yeah, it's it's easy to get overwhelmed and say, where do we start? You know, but I think you hit it on the head. You know, that individual accountability, and it's guys stepping up and taking responsibility for their little corner of the world. You know,
and absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'm a father. I have three kids, and my two sons are 15 and 14, and I got a daughter who's 10, and, we're all fighting those battles, man. So it's, making men is a huge, huge responsibility.
Tom, real quick, I love the book of Proverbs, okay? And, it's funny because, really what the book of Proverbs is, it's a book of wisdom. Solomon wrote it. But what it is, it's just a father telling his son all the things about life. Mm-hmm. What are the things, son? These are the things, son, that you need to stay away from. Here, let me clue you in just a little bit. And Tom, it's the fathers that give weight to a boy's life. If you're accepted by your father, you can be rejected by anybody, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. The fact that a father gives weight, and I think of what is something that does not have weight? And I think of a feather. And you look at a feather, and it's just kind of blowing around. It goes here, it goes there. And that's what we have young boys doing. They go here, they go there. Who am I going to follow today? What way is the wind blowing? But when you have weight to your life, it's like a paperweight. Those papers don't go anywhere because you're rooted, you're grounded, you know who you are, you know what you're here for. Who told you? Your father. And when daddy doesn't tell you those things, we have a weightless society who will go anywhere and listen to anyone. And that is a very, very dangerous place.
Love that analogy, man. That's a great analogy. So, Peter, if somebody's listening to this right now, if there's a guy out there who's got his earbuds in, he's on the train, going to work, whatever it is, he wants to have a conversation with you and look into coaching and stuff like that, how does he, where does he find you? How does he reach out to you?
Well, first you can get me on my website. I got all my information there at www.cornermanlifecoach.com. I'm also on Twitter at Cornerman Coach. Can I give a telephone number too? Is that the or my telephone number is 630-258-2759. Again, my website is www.cornermanlifecoach.com, and you can find out any information you want from my website.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, Peter, I appreciate you hanging out with us today, and everything we do here is to help people build stronger lives, stronger businesses, and this certainly is a pretty important part of that is men and women both stepping up and growing stronger as individuals. So I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us today, and we'll catch you next time, man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Tom, for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks. All right, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us at the Strong Pinner Podcast today. When you get a chance, head over to iTunes and give us a rating or a review so that we can continue to reach more and more people with the Strong Pinner message. And don't forget to hit up Peter at cornermanlifecoach.com. If you or a man you know needs to, light a fire and reinvent themselves. So we'll see you guys next time. Motor hard.